little details. It's good to see you all. If we spread out real big, it looks like we get the house full. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I'm Wendell. I'm living love by Jesus. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food, work, and control. I've had issues with pornography, alcohol, rage, panic attacks, and depression. I promise. Matt and I do not talk about what we're going to talk about. And here he goes on this big, long rant about love. And I'm thinking, that's what I'm going to talk about tonight. So, perfect. You set the stage, my brother. I sat down this afternoon and started working on what I'm going to write as my blog tomorrow. And I've reversed it. I used to blog Monday and then talk about it Sunday night. Well, that's, I talk about it Sunday night and blog about it Monday. There's a pushback against love. Can you believe that? There's a pushback. There are people who are resisting love, and they're doing it in all kinds of ways. And I've been pissed about it. Oh, that's on tape, isn't it? But anyway, we're in the sanctuary now. We're not in the cuff. you can bleep that part out. No, I'll leave it in. I've been upset about it the last couple of weeks. I thought, how? Because I'll tell you why I've been upset, because of some things that have been said to me. But I thought, why? Why would you push back against love? Why would you resist love? And today when I sat down and started writing my blog, I thought, dude, you spent most of your life resisting love. So who are you to accuse them? Or who are you to, you know, have hurt feelings toward them? And my resistance to love, and I've told you this before, but my resistance to love is I would work all week on a sermon and preach a passionate sermon on Sunday morning to a house full of people about God's love for them. There would be people weeping. You know, there would be people who, when they came out the door at the end, said, that meant so much to me to know that God loves me. And I've shared this with you before. And I'd be the last one out, and as I walked across the yard to the parsonage, I would think that sermon applied to everybody in that room except me. And I knew love conceptually. I understood it. I knew all the scriptures. I knew the God of scripture was the God of love. But I could not feel in my heart that I was loved. I've shared all this with you before. So today I started thinking, okay, so why the resistance? Why did I resist that all those years? Because I've gotten that far telling you the story, that I'd walk across the lawn and not think it applied to me. But I never really dug deeper and have never shared with you deeper why I felt that. And it's interesting, while I had my mad on against my dad, against our dad, all those years, it was so easy. Well, I struggled with love because of my dad. You know, anything I had, anger issues, depression, it was my dad. He did that. Now that I've been reconciled with my dad for several years, I've realized, whoa, that was so far from the truth. My dad is accountable for about that much of it. Now that I've been reconciled with my dad in my heart, my spirit, he's gone to be with Jesus, what? Okay, it was a long time. Yeah, long time ago. No, it was more than that. 20 years ago. But I wasted 20 years blaming my dad for stuff that he didn't do and only thinking about him and things in ways that discredited him. And since I've reconciled with him in the last 2 or 3 years, I've realized my father had a tremendously positive impact on my life. Tremendously positive. And so many of the things I look at myself and say, thank you, Jesus, that I'm able to do this, I think, I got those from Clive Van Balen. He taught me. So now when I ask myself, okay, why did you resist so long? God took away my crutch. He was my dad. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. I can't do that. I can't blame my dad anymore. So now I got to dig. Now I got to sit there at my computer trying to write this blog and think, okay, get honest, dude. Why is it that you... And part of it was that I had done some things and felt some things and said some things that were not good throughout my life. And I regretted them. And that regret grew into guilt, which I should have felt. That's the natural human emotional response. Then it stacked itself up and became shame, which is not of God and not healthy. Guilt is for something you've done. Shame is for who you are. And I became ashamed of who I was, essentially, the person God created. None of us have the right to do that, to be ashamed of the person God created. We do not have that power. We're not qualified to make that kind of statement about the essential person inside. So I thought, okay, one of the things is I was living with shame. And I couldn't believe that God could love me when I felt so ashamed of myself. Well, I didn't have a correct view of myself. And so, you see how it's messed up. If you don't know who you are, then how do you know how God's going to love the you don't even know who you are? I mean, it's all mixed up. It's crazy. So that was one aspect, the shame deal. And then the second thing, which I openly admit every time I introduce myself, I am a raging control freak, and I have been ever since I can remember. I had four sisters. This one was always very respectful of my space. I had other sisters I will not name who were not. And I always got my own room because I was the only boy. So I had everything in order, very organized. I'm not sloppy. I'm very organized. And don't you dare come in my room and touch anything of mine. Don't you dare come in and mess anything up. That was my earliest. Just let me talk to my sister for a minute. Before you were born, you'll understand this. I got a fire engine one Christmas. Don't y'all listen. Got a fire engine, and guess who tore it up that day? No. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you don't come in my room. You don't touch my stuff. You don't understand boy stuff. You just play with the girl stuff. You know, you can tear the heads off your dolls and put them back on, and I can't do that with my trucks, whatever. So, but that started at a very early age, and it carried on through my life. And things that you laugh at when you're a kid become much more complex and much more hurtful the older you get. If you have a tendency when you're a kid, it's just who you are. You don't think about this may be good, it may not be bad, or be bad 10 years down the road. But as you grow into that, and it becomes kind of your default setting, I mean, I became a raging control freak. Our marriage was that way. I raised our kids that way. I did my job that way, everything. And so if I let God come into my life and love me the way he wants to love me, I have to give up that control. Because love is messy. And love is unpredictable. And love can be invasive. And love doesn't keep the same time clock I keep. And love doesn't have the same agenda that I have, or the same urgency for this project or that project I have. Love interrupts me in my busy work for God and the kingdom. Do you get it? Here I was, a minister working for God, but I wanted to be in control of my agenda every day. I wanted to be in control of every hour, every minute, and people calling me and wanting me to love on them, that interrupts me. And if they really had an issue, I wouldn't help them, but sometimes the issues a pastor has to deal with, can I get a witness, are like, really? Really? You want me to? Never mind. It gets pretty ridiculous. It gets pretty and those people, if I had taken time, I would have realized the issue they're calling about is not the issue. I need to dig deeper to the real issue and love on them there. But no, I didn't have time to do that because I was doing something much more important. So I realized that I was resistant to love for those two reasons, shame and control, and there were probably some other ones, but those are the two that I realized. Okay, so let me tell you some of the stuff I've heard. Since I've got in recovery, I've been in it for over 15 years. It's 15 years now, and I've told you this part of my story, but I got to bring you up to date. So when I got in recovery, the key to my recovery, the absolute key to my recovery, was to realize that God loved me right where I was at, looking at porn, drinking too much alcohol, hating on people, judging other people, being hypocrite, you name it. You go down the list. God adored me right in the middle of all that. He wasn't waiting for me to get my act together. He loved me right then. And it wasn't, and I've always made this distinction, it wasn't a tolerant love. I love you, but you need to sit in the back of the room till you get your act together. It was an adoring love that said, I love you, come and sit on my lap. Come here next to me and let me hug you. So when I felt that kind of love, that's when I began to heal. That's when my life began to change. And lo and behold, the alcohol issues changed. The hating issues changed. The porn issues changed. Everything just began. And I wasn't even working on them. That just God just kind of loved it out of me because I just let him. So I've come, you know, 15 years, and boy, he likes to talk about love a lot. Is that all you want to talk about? You know? And so I've had people here lately in this, and Matt was bringing it out. We're living in an atmosphere of hate. We're just living in an atmosphere where it's fashionable to hate, and not just hate, but to speak that hate. Not just speak it, but to yell it in people's faces and to do destructive things and say destructive. We're living, you know, and so I'm thinking, the world is going that way, and it seems like God is leading me this way. I feel like we need to talk about love. I feel like the voice of love needs to be heard, and I feel like we're losing faith in the power of love. That somehow we think there must be some other way because it looks like hate is winning right now. And I look and I think, what created this universe? Was it power? I think it was love. Look at the Garden of Eden. Look at God placing things right where he placed them because he's getting a nursery ready for his two little infants. That's love. Think about when you got a nursery ready for your firstborn or second. Think about that. Think about the love that was in your heart and the excitement you had to get that ready. And God is preparing this. And it's not that, look at how much power I've got. It's like, I love these people who are going to, these little children who are going to come in the nursery. It was love. And then John comes along and he says, what was Jesus all about? God loved the world so much. And so God is, you know, we believe he's a triune God. God is the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. And God, in the Trinity, for all of eternity, I can't fathom that. For all of eternity, what makes the Trinity work? Is it power? Is it wisdom? They've had so long they figured it out? I don't think so, because if that's the case, somebody probably had a better idea than the other one. Think about that one. That would be weird. That would be a weird discussion into Godhead. I got a better idea than that. I can't even imagine that. What makes the Trinity work? It's pure love. It's pure. And Jesus defined love. He said, this is the kind of love I'm talking about. The kind of love that will lay his life down for his brother. It's the one that says, I want to enhance you. I want to help you. I want to help you have a better, you have a better life. So that's in the Trinity. That kind of love is in the Trinity. It's been there for all of eternity. It created the planet. It's why Jesus came. It's why we're given the gift of the Holy Spirit. And the more this is hitting me, and the more this is, I think there is no other way. I mean, God set the precedent. God, for all eternity, God set the precedent. It's not about rules. It's not about power. It's not about wisdom. It's not about wealth. It's not about status. It's not about accomplishment. It's not about perfection. It's about love. It's when you face somebody, what do you feel toward that person? Who is that person to you? What's your heart intention toward that person? And love says, I want to lay my life down right now for you. I want to listen to whatever you need to tell me. I want to help you discover who you are and help you be you. That's what I want to do. That's my love toward you. And so, do I care whether you're black or white, gay or lesbian? Christian or Muslim, male or female, Republican or Democrat, or you know, whatever. I mean, all these distinctions we make, the only qualification is, are you a human being? Yes, I am. I adore you. Right now, you're my universe. And so, I'm thinking, this is not the kind of thing you can dabble in. This is not the kind of thing you can think, interesting concept. This is, you're either all in with love or you're not. And I almost wonder, I know I've gone to preaching tonight. I'm sorry. No, I'm not. I think this is part, I know he was talking about money, but I wonder if Jesus wasn't thinking of this. You either serve God or you serve mammon. And I wonder if part of that is you either live life for your own gain by criticizing, judging, fixing, controlling other people, or you live life trying to enhance and encourage and help other people. You have to do one or the other. You can't do both. There is no hybrid. And remember last week we talked about sheep and goats. Isn't it interesting that he talked about two different species? He didn't talk about shades of blue or, you know, he didn't talk about different kinds of apples, you know, where you can mix and make hybrid apples. He talked about two completely different species. And he said the one species instinctively loves, and they instinctively love so naturally that they don't even know they're a sheep. They don't even know it. They don't even realize it. And the goats so instinctively reject love that they don't even know they're goats. Do you see what I'm saying? But I think as humans, we have a choice. I don't think you're born a sheep or a goat. I think you have a choice where you want to go with that. So the reason you're getting blistered tonight with love, boy, you shelled down the corn, but it was about love. So it's not about hellfire and damnation. Here lately, I've been pressed. I've had people tell me, you're all about the love of God, and you're not willing to say certain groups will go to hell. I don't want to associate with you anymore. Long-standing friendship. Because you're not gonna agree with me that this group over here goes to hell. I said, I can't do that. No. I love those people. No. I've had other people say, you're delusional. Because you got to realize that if it's all love, it's just cotton candy and bluebirds and everything's gushy and there's no regulations. There's no, you're just going to go off path right away. Okay, so why by the law and by trying to obey the rules did I struggle with pornography and hate and all that stuff all those years, trying to keep the rules, struggled with it. When I gave into God's love, it all started going away. Love can't change you unless you dive in the deep end. You can't twinkle your toe in the shallow end. You have to dive in and completely immerse yourself in love, 100%. And then you realize, oh my, now I know the transformative magic of love. I see what Jesus was talking about. I get it. But until you dive in the deep end and say, I'm all in, it's not going to happen. I've had some other, trying to think of the pushbacks I've had here lately. I've had other people just say, you're just so lazy. You're so lazy and apathetic. So you're just going to sit under a tree and let God love you, and life's going to get better. The world's going to get better. It's so easy and apathetical and lazy. And I want to look at them and say, okay, you try it. You try it and tell me it's easy. You try it and tell me it's lazy. Anybody who has ever capitulated to love realizes you're in for the greatest, most strenuous adventure of your life. It's not heavy like keeping the law. It's BP threatening like taking a roller coaster ride. Do you see the difference? It's signing up for a thrill ride like you've never had. And so we're not always prepared for that. But it's not like it's hard work. Does everybody follow me here? It's not like it's hard work. It's like it's a hard adventure. And there's a difference between hard work and a hard adventure. I was taking a walk with a friend of mine who does a lot of hiking in remote wilderness areas, and he said he was out west, no firearm, no nothing, just a walking stick and a camera and a backpack. And he said he was up going up this rocky trail, and he said a foot in front of him, a black bear just busted through. And he was telling me about what that does to you when that happens, you know, that just the feeling of that was a large beast. And he eats meat, and I'm meat, and whoa. The bear was afraid. It left him. But it's that kind of hard work. You get what I'm saying? You encounter a lot of black bears and grizzly bears and mountain lions, and so it's not like you have to carry a heavy burden. It's just like you have a lot of surprises, and you have a lot of blind sides that you're not prepared for. But some people pay big money for that kind of thing. You know what? They pay big money for that kind of whitewater adventure. And so it kind of goes back to what Wayne said. And I'm rambling now at this point. It goes back to what Wayne said over and over. Y'all realize it's been about a year. Whew, man, that's been hitting me hard. But Wayne used to say all the time, it was one of the first profound things he said to me when we first got acquainted. And I thought, oh, crap, I got to hang out with this guy. But he said, you have to decide whether life is a test that you have to pass or an adventure you get to explore. Do you remember him saying that? Or something like that. And he said that over and over. And they're, neither one of them is easy. If you want to choose the keep the rules route and the take the test route, it's laborious. It's like you come to church, not this church, but you go to church with a sack full of rocks. And they give you two or three more rocks. You put it in your sack and you drag it home. And then you bring it back and they give you a few more the next Sunday. And, you know, that hard, laborious, law-keeping test life. Or there's dodging grizzly bear living. Whitewater raft living. You know, there's that kind of thing where you don't know when the phone's going to ring. You don't know when somebody's going to need some help. You don't know how messy and unpredictable life might get. So no, it's not easy, but it sure beats the heck out of dragging around a sack of rocks. You know, it really, really does. So, yeah, I don't want to resist love. I want to be all in, and I don't know where it's going to take me, and I don't know what it's going to ask of me, and I don't know what I'm going to face. Wayne didn't know he was going to get cancer. I mean, he openly said, I wouldn't have chosen this path. But it, too, has things on it I can learn that can, you know. So he treated his death just like he treated his life. It's like an adventure. Wasn't a fun one, but it was an adventure. And so we kind of have the choice. We kind of have the choice whether we want to live as a goat, looking out for me, taking the test, you know, checking all the rules off. Or we can live it as a sheep that says, bring it on. Bring it on. Give me somebody to love. Give me somebody to help. Give me somebody to listen to. I've tried both, and I think most of y'all have tried both. Hands down, I'd rather be a sheep. That, you know, I just would rather be, because it, yeah, that's the way to live. That was mumbo jumbo. Dadgummit. And you sat there so patiently. But it's his fault because he got me wound up. He primed the pump. He got me. Well, I was already wound up. But y'all, let's love. Let's love. It's the only way. It's the only way. So that's all.